How are your friendships doing? Earlier this fall, Pew Research Center released findings from a survey it did about Americans and their friendships. According to Pew, 61% of U.S. adults said having close friends is extremely important or very important for people to live a fulfilling life. That's more than 30% higher than the number of people who said being married or having kids or having lots of money was the key to fulfillment. But what happens when those friendships, even the close ones, start to run out of steam? Given that importance, it can be really hard to take a hard look at what we're getting and not getting from our friendly relationships. Our next guest has some suggestions to help. That includes making the call, in some cases, to break up with our friends. You could join in at 800-642-1234. How important are your friends in your life? How satisfied are you with your friendships? How often do you really reflect on your friendships, their value, whether they're healthy, and have you ever ended a friend relationship on purpose, or you just let it fizzle out? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Todd Kashdan is professor of psychology at George Mason University in Northern Virginia and an expert on the psychology of well-being, psychological strengths, mental agility, and social relationships. His books include The Upside of Your Dark Side and The Art of Insubordination, How to Dissent and Defy Effectively. He recently wrote a newsletter post about breaking up with friends. Todd, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, it's so good to be here.
You cover a lot of different social relationship topics in your work and on your newsletter. What led you to tackle our friendships this time around?
Well, one of the interesting things that happened during the pandemic was you had people trapped in their households and you saw this bifurcated response. People had realized how strong their romantic relationships, relationships with their kids and friendships are. And other people realized they aren't as strong as intimate as they thought. And they felt lonely, even though they had people with them trapped in their house for years.
And how did that end up affecting the importance we place on friends?
I think it made people realize, one, fitting with the science, that there is no greater predictor of who ends up very happy versus just being happy than the quality and significance of our relationships. But in over the past few years, I think people realize that I'm investing a ton in my romance life. I'm investing a ton if I have kids. But very little rituals exist in society other than this thing called Friendsgiving for what we do with our friends.
Yeah, I think a lot of us might think, you know, friendships just happen naturally. They emerge out of whatever proximity, shared interest, and they rise or fall on their own power. Is it worth thinking about them as something we might have to do some work on, just like we might work on a marriage or other romantic relationship?
Absolutely. And that's why I'm glad we're having this conversation, because if we really dissect what are the things that we get from friends that are a little bit timeless compared to other relationships, and you can break it down into six. So one is good friends are there when you need support. The other is when you need help, like you don't know how to break open a lawnmower when it's broken or fix a flat tire. The other is loyalty, is that they're going to stand for you even when you're not there and protect your reputation. Then there's a sense of trust. You can confide in them. Don't forget, you just have these joyful, pleasant, funny, wacky, bizarre experiences. And finally, someone to share in not just the bad things that happen in your life, but share your successes without feeling envious or jealous. And that's six really juicy things to have in your life.
You talk about kind of an experiment of doing friendship audits, taking these relationships that we might take for granted and thinking about what kind of value we get from them, which could lead us to appreciate them all the more or to figure out if we need to fix or end things. How do we get started on that process? We think of this friendship in a way we haven't thought of it before.
Yeah, so I just made a cute little survey based on the scientific research. And one of the things you could ask yourself is, after you spend time with them, is your energy going up, going down, or staying the same regularly? And so you can make this is a really good indicator of the quality of being with the person. If you play pickleball or basketball or chess, like, do you find yourself annoyed and disturbed after interacting with them? Because that's usually a sign that this is not someone that is fitting well into your life unless they have some super specialized skill or strength that they're giving you. Another one is, to what degree, when after you share something important to them, do you feel heard and validated? Are they your cheerleader, or do they treat you like an inanimate object, like those cheese balls that we always pass in Costco, but you never really want to be buying them? And then another one is, how do you resolve conflicts in your friendship? And if you're not having any conflicts, you can ask, are we talking about the things that really matter to me in life? Like the things that really are pushing my boundaries and pissing me off so much that I feel compelled to write something on social media.
This is Wisconsin. We might buy that cheese ball. I want to make that clear, Todd. We're talking to Todd Kashtan, professor of psychology at George Mason University in Northern Virginia. We are talking about friendships, putting more value on them, auditing them, seeing if they're doing what we want in our lives, and maybe, if that's what it takes, ending them. You could join in with your friendship stories, good, bad, otherwise, at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Chloe is with us in La Crosse. Chloe, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
I just wanted to say I think it's really cool that you guys are doing this segment, and I've had friends that I've kept since second grade, and it's been some of the most valuable time for me in my life, and those friends that I've had the longest, I also have a ton of conflict with because I'm a person who doesn't shy away from conflict, and I'm, you know, we've had breakups, and a lot of times we've come back together, and our relationship's been even stronger, and I think it's the same as a romantic relationship. You have to stick up for what's right for you. And sometimes you push someone away for a bit, but with those friendships, sometimes they get stronger because of it.
Interesting, Chloe. Thanks so much for sharing that. Well, Todd, let's talk about that. When is it time to think about a friendship breakup, or in Chloe's case, a friendship break for a while?
Yeah, I just want to say I'm so glad Chloe was the first call because she's such a role model for thinking about friendship seriously, which is that you can break up and you can get back together again. And part of this is, here's like a mantra that I tend to have as a psychologist, which is, other than your old friends, like Chloe's talking about having those people that have known her at different stages of her life since second grade, if you have no change in your friendships every 10 years, you can ask yourself, am I even growing or evolving a lot? Like, you should be outgrowing a few of your friendships. And one of the things is to have sometimes those difficult conversations with yourself first is, do I feel as if I am being the person I most like to be when I'm around these characters?
Chloe, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Now, Todd, one option is, you know, sometimes friendships just slowly fizzle and nobody really notices it and then they're just gone. But you give examples in your own life and that of others where there's a conversation about the end of a friendship. That sounds horrible to me. How, if we're in that situation where we want to talk about dissolving the friendship, how do we have that conversation?
Yeah, I'm glad you felt the, you know, that clamminess inside, because you should feel that. And if you don't, it probably the relationship doesn't mean anything. I mean, one of the most important strategies is what I call the discomfort caveat. And this is also useful if you want to get a raise at work and have that conversation with your boss, which is, start the conversation by describing how hard the conversation is for you and why. And so you might want to go to someone and say, listen, I love hanging out with you. We've been friends ever since our kids started playing with each other in kindergarten. But sometimes, and I feel even anxious saying this to you, I feel as if I am such a low priority in your life that you would, if the ice cream man came down the block, you would cancel plans that we set for months to go see a concert to make sure that you were in line with your kids to go get some cones. And it feels as if it's so unimportant to you and I feel differently. Like, maybe we should just kind of have a conversation about that. And by you revealing that you feel anxious about it up front, what that does is it brings people's defenses down and they feel compassion, empathy, as opposed to trying to rip your head off.
And you've been through conversations like this. You wrote about some of them. I mean, how bad was it? I get clabby just thinking about it. How did it come out?
Yeah, they're cringy, you know, but they make great stories. And I'm really proud of myself that I actually did it, because you really, you know, you just want to like just take your head into another whiskey and say, I'll just wait until this thing, they fade out and stop calling me. You know, one of the scenarios that I talked about is when I was in my 30s and I had a friend who was super intelligent, like entrepreneur. And every time he hung out, he would tell me about his new ventures, how much money he's making. I mean, would list the actual details of all the amazing things that he bought. And I was just barely surviving paycheck to paycheck to pay for my townhouse. And I realized after several months that he never asked me any questions ever. And while I enjoy hearing about and I love his successes, it's really important is it reciprocated? And all of us have this experience of, hey, did that person ask you any questions over that 3-hour dinner? And you're always like, no. So we must be that person sometimes to other people. And I think if we are just candid enough to say, hey, I just want to say, I know this is uncomfortable to say, I realized you didn't ask me one thing over that entire 3-hour time we're having a barbecue. And we're standing right next to each other. Like, did you even notice that? And they'll probably say no. And they'll probably appreciate the feedback, even though you might get some shock and awe in the beginning.
We're talking about friendships with Todd Kasdan, professor of psychology at George Mason University. Talk about how to evaluate, to mend, and if necessary, end those relationships. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have an experience you'd like to share, a question for our guest, have you ever consciously and actively decided to end a friendship with someone? Or flip it around, did you ever find an old friendship that you realized had fizzled and rekindled it? You reached out and sparked it all over again. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation with social relationships expert Todd Kasdan, professor of psychology at George Mason University, talking about the state of friendships around the country and maybe your own friendships and how and when to decide to end them if need be. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Edward called us from Illinois. Couldn't stay on the line, but Edward says he had friends he made related to substance abuse, but when lives change in that regard, he says, it's hard to remain connected. Todd, a situation where maintaining those connections, as much as you may have appreciated at the time, may endanger your recovery. This is a pretty important thing to think about.
Yeah, and I'm, again, another role model, which is, to what degree am I in a relationship with someone that's improving my mental health or leading to a deterioration in my mental health? And this also happens a lot with men as well, where often when you're first dating and you're younger and you're in your 20s and you're taking more risks, is you develop these friendships where you gain social status and likability by how many boundaries you break. And when you get older and you have a more stable life and maybe you found a person, maybe you formed a family, those relationships often become, for lack of a better word, too immature for our current value system. And that's often a very challenging divide, because you like the 20-something person you are when you're around them, but you know that's not really who you are at the present time. And we have to honor that as we change, we might need to change our relationships. And sometimes it just means spending less time with those people that we knew in our younger years.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Pam is with us now in Marshall. Pam, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about?
I just wanted to talk. Well, I had a friend many years ago. I'm 73, and this was when I was about 30. And she wanted me to help her. She had some money she needed to be borrowed to, and I didn't have a lot, but whatever, I helped her. And then she wanted me to babysit free for at night, so she could go out, and I was working full-time and a single parent also, but I did. Problem was, in those days, I didn't know how to say no until I got to the point that I got furious. So I finally got furious and told her I wasn't going to have her in my life again. And then about 20 years ago, and I had moved and everything, somehow she got a hold of me by phone, left me a message to please call her. She really, really wanted to talk. She couldn't wait to hear me again. I called her, and she wanted to know if she could borrow $20. Oh. I broke up with her again.
Pam, wow. I'm sorry about that, but thanks for sharing that. Todd, we want to help our friends. We want to be there for them. Where do we cross the line into, as our caller was, of being taken advantage of?
You know, it's funny. I have three daughters and two are twin 16-year-olds. And I regularly tell them when they talk about problems with their friends or anyone they're dating, of like, hey, what's the ratio of stress to joy? And when the ratio is really problematic, really high numbers, where really stressful, like I don't even, like I'm doing favors, but I don't even feel good about them, like Pam is describing. And like, where's the joy that counteracting that? If you can't get those numbers to balance out, like it does, the math does the work for you. And you realize, do I have other people that can replace them, that could increase the quality of my life?
Thanks again for sharing that story. We heard from Allie in Appleton who couldn't stay on, but has a question about how to maintain friendship if you have a friend who keeps emotionally dumping problems onto you. So this is kind of related, I feel like, Todd. Like if it's always a one-way street and they can dump their problems on you and you can go, when you're having trouble, talk it to them, that's one thing. If it's a one-way street, maybe something different?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a psychologist. I try to pretend I'm not one when I'm on airplanes and when I'm traveling, just because of this reason. Because as soon as I say it, I hear about everyone's divorces and all that, how horrible their kids are. I usually say, like, I'm an etymologist or I'm a book editor. One of the important things for men in particular, because they're worse at this than women, is to signal the alarm and test it before a fire starts. And that is, low stakes, difficult experiences, throw them out there and see if your friends will ask questions, ask for details, take curiosity in what you're going to say. Because that tells you, before the big stuff happens, like, do they care and are they invested in my well-being? And if it's okay for asymmetry to happen here and there, where people are unloading on you every once in a while, it's never going to be equal in the moment, mm-hmm. but span the timeline over months and years. But you have to give a little bit of self-blame if you're not disclosing important things yourself that are difficult.
Talking to Todd Kashdan from George Mason University. Even though he tries to hide it, he is a psychologist and he writes about social relationships online very frequently. Still time for your experiences at 800-642-1234. Todd, I see every now and then there'll be a wave of articles on, adults maybe don't have enough friends these days and adults don't know how to make friends, because it's not like we're five and we can walk up to somebody and say, will you be my friend? Or I don't know, can we?
Yeah.
How do we build new friendships?
You know, there's a great series of studies from the University of Chicago, and they ask people before they go on to public trains, metros, what do you think it'll be like for the person, a stranger, if you went up and had a conversation with them? And they say, oh my God, it'd be terrible. I'd be in their personal space. They'd probably spit on me. Like, they'd probably like videotape me and start cursing me out. And then they ask people to actually do it. Go talk to a stranger. Like, ask them about like what they're wearing. Like, what's the article that they're reading? And what you find is people underestimate how enjoyable it is for someone to come up to them and talk to them who's a stranger. And people underestimate how pleasurable it is have a conversation with a stranger. So everyone is making an erroneous expectation of what it's like to talk to someone. And because of that, you have all these people, more often men than women, that are sitting right next to each other and don't say a word because everyone thinks the other person would be particularly uncomfortable if a conversation was to be triggered.
Now, here's another question. We've been talking about how we can evaluate if, we have a bad friendship or the other person has turned into a bad friend. How can we self-diagnose and ask the question, am I the bad friend? Like, I know how I'm a bad friend. I'm terrible if we live in different cities. I'm terrible about keeping up with people. I know this. I've taken some steps on that. How do we self-evaluate to make sure we're being good friends to our friends?
It's a really good question. Obviously, the easier answer is you could ask someone, but you're not going to really get probably an honest response. When I ask people for their evaluation of me as a friend, as a colleague, I always open with a caveat of like, listen, I want you to start with the negative things. There's something that I have to suck at. Like, I am not the master of being a friend. So start with that. Tell me what I could do better. And then from there, you're not talking about, am I a good friend or not? They're just giving you, like, very playfully, you're having a jovial conversation of, what are you an 8 at or a 7 at, as opposed to a 10? And what they bring up is going to be like, you know, it's like the secret sauce of how bad it really is. Like, are they bringing up something that's minuscule? Like, you know, when I go on the grill, you never come and talk to me. You just run around the party as if, like, I don't even exist. Or are they saying, you know what? I kind of feel like you're almost flirting with my wife all the time. So those are two very different responses.
How do we, just very briefly, Todd, I would be worried about, I would instantly lapse into defensive mode no matter how much I brace myself. How do we turn down those shields a little bit?
Yeah, so I think the answer is roll with the waves that happen there. So you are going to be defensive. You might be upset and say, whoa, that's a lot coming at me. I can't believe you waited this long to tell me. All right, I'm going to grab a drink. I'm going to come right back and just, like, let's just, like, put a cap and actually have this conversation now. And I will try my best not to blow my lid. So bringing, like, a little bit of playfulness into a serious conversation just to, like, allow it to take place. And then a few days later, you could have the more important detailed, nuanced conversation about what actually happened there and what you, now that you can think about it, what you really want to say.
Todd, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure.
That's Todd Kashdan, professor of psychology at George Mason University. We talked to him about evaluating our friendships, some of the best ways to fix them or end them if and when they've run their course for one reason or another. Keep sharing your stories over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.